I mourned for the big calamity China has faced. What happened to these people was very unfortunate.
The original epicenter of the coronavirus is slowly opening back up. It's Wednesday, April 8th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, Japan is put under at least a partial state of emergency. Some good news, but also bad, as New York struggles with its battle against the pandemic. And you'll hear how the virus has changed elections in South Korea. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Residents in the Chinese city of Wuhan, the original epicenter of the coronavirus, are breathing a sigh of relief as mandatory lockdown is over and some of the other restrictions have been gradually lifted. They're also mourning those who lost their lives to the illness. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports.
A special moment to mourn for the dead from the virus in Wuhan, the capital of Hubei province. Cars, trains, and ships sounded their horns while pedestrians bowed their heads in silence.
I mourned for the big calamity China has faced. What happened to these people was very unfortunate.
My heart is heavy for those white angels.
Slowly, people are starting to return to work. Wuhan's vegetable vendors resumed their trade behind large yellow barriers with chairs and stools set up on the other side for customers.
Our business is not bad. Here is definitely better than indoors. People are willing to buy things outside. They quickly buy and leave.
I don't feel safe going to a supermarket. There are too many people. Many infections happen in the supermarket.
Elsewhere, people were out riding their bikes. One resident in particular enjoyed a family reunion.
My wife works in a fever clinic. She was not sure if she was infected, so she and her colleagues were under quarantine until today. Our compound has lifted the lockdown, so she took a day off and came to see our son, who hasn't seen his mother for 2 months.
The Chinese government says about 2,500 people died in the city of 11 million people, accounting for more than 75% of China's coronavirus fatalities. But some in the West have raised questions about whether these government figures are completely transparent. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Chinese health officials reported no new deaths from the novel coronavirus outbreak over the past 24 hours, the first such report since January. The National Health Commission said Tuesday that it only had 32 new confirmed cases of COVID-19, all of them from people who have returned from overseas. China has recorded over 80,000 total confirmed cases of coronavirus infections during the pandemic, including a total of 3,331 deaths. The Health Commission says 1,033 patients who are asymptomatic, who show no signs of the disease but can still infect others, are currently under isolation, including 18 patients in Hubei. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has formally declared a 30-day state of emergency in Tokyo and other parts of the country in response to the rising cases of coronavirus.
Shinzo Abe made the emergency declaration after a spike in infections in Tokyo, but it was a stay-at-home request, not a European-style lockdown, and violators will not be penalized. Despite having relatively few infections and deaths, Japan is a worrying target for a virus that's been killing the elderly at much higher rates than any other group. The state of emergency, which is until May 6, will only permit Tokyo's governor and six other district heads to do more to reinforce calls for social distancing. For most people, the new coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms, but for some, it can cause severe illness and death. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
We invite you to read more on our top stories by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Tuesday said that the Trump administration will focus on keeping critical medical items in the United States, given the domestic need for such materials. The Afghan Taliban said Tuesday they will now approach the Americans to resolve the prisoner release issue after telling its technical team in Kabul to stop participating in what they called fruitless meetings with representatives of Afghan government. And New Zealand's Prime Minister has announced that Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny are essential workers, allowing them to do their jobs despite national lockdown rules due to the coronavirus pandemic. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the VOA.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. New York City's death toll from the coronavirus has eclipsed the number of those killed at the World Trade Center on 9/11. Health officials say more than 3,200 people have been killed in the city thus far. That's about 450 more than were killed in the city in 2001 when hijacked planes slammed into the World Trade Center. New York State recorded 731 new coronavirus deaths, its biggest one-day jump yet, for a statewide toll of nearly 5,500, according to Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Right now we're projecting that we are reaching a plateau in the total number of hospitalizations, and you can see the growth, and you see it starting to flatten. Again, this is a projection. It still depends on what we do.
But in an encouraging sign, Cuomo reported that hospital admissions and the number of those receiving breathing tubes are dropping, indicating that measures taken to force people to keep their distance from one another are succeeding. Despite no scientific research showing its effectiveness, President Donald Trump said the U.S. has bought almost 30 million doses of a drug for the treatment of COVID-19. Trump continues to push the drug despite his top health expert warning that the evidence for it is anecdotal. White House correspondent Patty Wadakaswara has this story.
Pharmacies in Africa are running out of anti-malaria pills as people stock up on the drugs as a defense against the coronavirus, despite no data showing its effectiveness. Desperate countries are expanding access to hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19, including the U.S.
We bought massive amounts of it, 29 million doses of it. We have it coming from all of the labs. We're actually now doing it here because in case it does work, we want to have it.
Hydroxychloroquine, known by its brand name Plaquenil, is used to treat malaria, lupus, and arthritis. Despite the drug's unproven benefits, since February, Trump has been pushing it with extraordinary zeal.
I may take it, okay? I may take it. And I'll have to ask my doctors about that, but I may take it.
Anthony Fauci, Trump's leading health expert on the coronavirus task force, has repeatedly said evidence the drug works is anecdotal. Axios reported that White House advisor Peter Navarro has clashed with Fauci on the drug, which the administration approved for emergency use in mid-March, even though no clinical study has been done to test its effectiveness to treat COVID-19.
Chloroquine has been tried for many viral diseases, more than a dozen. It's never been shown to work in those viral diseases for a clinical benefit. And so we have just a little bit of human evidence that that it might work. The studies are small, and we desperately need results from randomized clinical trials to see if it's going to have any effect.
Trump has suggested that countries with high malaria rates show low numbers of COVID-19 and that people with lupus are not as affected by the coronavirus. That is conjecture, said Anand Parekh, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary for Health, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center.
Until we see data and evidence, we should not jump to any conclusions. The more likely reason, for example, countries in Africa not reporting a high number of cases is simply because testing has lagged in those countries.
Hospitals in the U.S. have been giving hydroxychloroquine to coronavirus patients, reasoning that it is relatively safe and likely will not hurt. The drug is not considered safe for people with abnormal heart rhythms. Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson was in stable condition Tuesday in a hospital intensive care unit with the coronavirus, and while he is not on a ventilator, he is receiving oxygen, according to his spokesman. Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab has taken over many of Johnson's duties temporarily while he's being treated at St. Thomas Hospital. Britain has no official post of Deputy Prime Minister. The 55-year-old Johnson is the first major world leader confirmed to have COVID-19. He was admitted to the hospital late Sunday with a fever and cough that persisted 10 days after he was diagnosed with the virus and was moved to the ICU Monday evening after his condition worsened. Johnson spokesman James Slack said the Prime Minister has been stable overnight but remains in good spirits. He's receiving standard oxygen treatment and is breathing without any other assistance. He said Johnson was not receiving mechanical ventilation or non-invasive respiratory support. He would not give details of what form of oxygen treatment the Prime Minister was getting. Johnson had been quarantined in his Downing Street residence since being diagnosed with COVID-19 on March 26. This news break from VOA Asia. Taiwan's cabinet has told government agencies to stop using Zoom Video's Communication Incorporated's conferencing app. The latest blow to the company is it battles criticism of its booming platform over privacy and security. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia.
How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
We continue now on VOA Asia. As the number of coronavirus infection cases rises in Cambodia, businesses that cannot afford to close enact strict hygiene standards but remain worried about the future. From Phnom Penh, VOA's Phuon Bo Pa and Khan Sukumono filed this report narrated by Chetra Chop.
Don Lee, who has been a tuk-tuk driver in Cambodia's capital for the past 10 years, depends entirely on the income he earns from his fares, even though he risks danger from the coronavirus pandemic. The 40-year-old father of two says he uses masks and hand sanitizers to protect himself and his family from the virus. But he doesn't know how effective they are.
Following the advice from the Ministry of Health, I use soap and alcohol to clean. After my clients pay me, I spray alcohol on my hands and the money I have just received. And then I spray the back seats with alcohol.
The novel coronavirus disease, or COVID-19, broke out of Wuhan, China in December 2019 and has now quickly spread globally. In Cambodia, more than 100 cases have been reported. The country has closed schools, banned foreign nationals from entering, and adopted preventive measures such as wearing masks, washing hands, and practicing social distancing. For some business owners whose livelihood depends on staying open, the preventive measures are their only protection.
This is for hand sanitizing, and this is for measuring body temperature. If the customer's temperature is more than 37.9 degrees Celsius, I ask them to sit down and recheck their temperature. If the temperature stays the same, I ask them to go to the hospital. If customers come to our shop without wearing a mask, we explain to them that we need to secure the safety of our staff and the customers themselves. We ask them to buy our 25-cent mask at the door, and if we are out of masks, we ask them to buy one at another store before we let them in our shop.
While dozens of business owners have closed their shops in Phnom Penh to limit the chances of infection, many others cannot afford to do so. The World Bank reports that about 13% of Cambodians live in poverty, with little social insurance available and most of the population being self-employed. Many Cambodians are dependent on their daily income. For Don Lee, even parking his tuk-tuk at home poses a risk for his family.
I'm scared of the virus, but if I don't make money, my wife and my kids have no rice to eat. I have to go out and take risks.
For Pon Bupa and Kan Sukumano, reporting in Phnom Penh, I'm Chatra Chap, VOA News, Washington.
South Korea has been widely praised as a global model for how to contain the coronavirus. Now it's trying to show the world how to vote during the pandemic. The country is holding a legislative election next Wednesday, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
Dressed in his official blue campaign jacket, South Korean lawmaker Lee Hae-sik is sweeping the sidewalk and picking up trash along with several volunteers. He says his party told him to hold a social distancing approved campaign. So here he is, cleaning the street and disinfecting public surfaces. He says these are his main campaign activities now. South Korea is moving ahead with its legislative election, even during a time of social distancing. Gone are the noisy street rallies that are a hallmark of South Korean elections. Instead, the two-week campaign is more subdued, with candidates focusing much of their efforts online. Voting will look different, too. At polling stations, face masks, plastic gloves, and temperature checks will be required. Anyone showing symptoms will vote at a separate booth. Many coronavirus patients will be voting by mail. Some problems couldn't be fixed. Because of lockdowns overseas, only about half of Korean voters living in foreign countries will be able to vote. But there was never any serious consideration of delaying the election, says candidate Shin Bom-chul. Shin says the conditions may not be very ideal, but they're the same for everyone. So he thinks the vote should proceed. The vote is a midterm test for President Moon Jae-in. Moon's approval ratings have gone up as his government successfully contains the virus. But analyst Jong Han-ul says Moon isn't safe yet because of South Korea's fragile economy. So far, the outbreak has not forced South Korea's economy to shut down, as in other countries. And now, its democracy is also finding a way to move forward, even during a pandemic. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Here is a news break from VOA Asia. The Great Barrier Reef off the coast of Australia is suffering its third mass bleaching event in 5 years. But the current global health pandemic has pushed the news of the major environmental crisis onto the back burner. Remember to explore more on the stories you hear on our website at voanews.com and on many digital platforms. Australia's highest court has quashed the child abuse convictions of the Catholic Church's Cardinal George Pell. The former financial advisor to the Pope was serving a 6-year jail term. He was found guilty in December of 2018 of sexually abusing two choir boys in 1996 when he was the Catholic Archbishop of Melbourne. Cardinal Pell has always said he was innocent. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Cardinal George Pell was the most senior Catholic figure in the world to be jailed for child abuse. He'll now be freed after a year in prison. Australia's High Court has said there was reasonable doubt that the alleged offences could have taken place in a busy cathedral almost 25 years ago. A jury found in 2018 that Cardinal Pell had committed what the trial judge said was a brazen and forcible sexual attack on two choir boys. But his lawyers had argued the case against him was flawed because it relied on the uncorroborated evidence of the surviving boy. In a unanimous decision, the High Court concluded that there was a significant possibility that an innocent person was found guilty. Noel DeBean, a religious affairs specialist at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, says the decision will be celebrated by Pell's supporters, but will disappoint other victims of abuse.
Individuals who had been offended against felt that the bringing down of George Pell had somehow justified all their pain, had helped them get past it. So I think there's going to be complex and difficult reaction to this. Relief, of course, from those who have believed in George Pell's innocence.
Cardinal Pell will soon be free from Barwon Prison in the Australian state of Victoria. His acquittal brings an end to a 5-year legal saga that took allegations of abuse to the heart of the Vatican. The High Court ruling was handed down to an almost empty court registry in Brisbane due to physical distancing measures introduced in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA's Islamabad correspondent Aisha Tanzim grapples with the work-from-home restrictions and the competing guilt of either not reporting on the human suffering around her or putting the health of her crew at risk.
Things are moving from surreal to downright fictiony. Yep, that's not a word. I invented it. The other day, I had to go for a bit of essential grocery shopping. Seriously, it felt like a real-life version of the video game Pac-Man. Every other human on the street or in the shop was out to eat me. To stay alive, I had to stay away from them at all costs. So I zigzagged right to left on the sidewalk, trying to keep my 6 feet distance away from all passers-by. Inside the supermarket, the game intensified. Every time I saw another customer walking down the aisle toward me, I would turn and walk the other way. If I couldn't find something and the salespeople tried to help me, I would gesture wildly for them to stay away. The mental toll of just that bit of grocery shopping was enough to make me feel physically tired. I have felt less stress traveling through war-torn Afghanistan. Talking of Afghanistan, this is the time when I should have been there. I'm forced to cover from a distance stories that require an up-close look. And that's the biggest dilemma. Millions of people around me are suffering. I need to be telling their stories, the human stories. But I'm more restricted now than I am covering wars and conflict. How do I do my job without putting my health, or more importantly, the health of my crew, at risk? Yes, we're taking all the precautions, the face masks, the sanitizer, the gloves, but I'm taking my crew out. They have little kids. I grapple with this every day. The guilt is eating me. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
As the spread of the coronavirus forces more and more Americans to stay home, some are finding it an ideal time to foster or adopt an animal. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with a Washington area teacher who recently adopted a dog and now finds himself completely smitten.
Goldie is a lucky dog. She finally got to go home with Tom Drescher and his wife, Becky Nolan.
Yes.
The couple was thinking about adopting a dog, so when the coronavirus came to town and both started working from home, they decided it was an ideal time to make the move.
It made a lot of sense to us to adopt a dog now because we realized that we could give Goldie here the time and the attention and the care that she needed.
At 10 and a half, the terrier pit bull mix is older than most adoptees and has a few health issues. But that was just fine with Tom and Becky.
We recognized that it was a good opportunity for us with extra time to take in a dog that otherwise might not be adopted.
The couple adopted Goldie from the Humane Rescue Alliance, a leading animal welfare organization in Washington. Ashley Vaughn is director of adoptions at their two shelters. She says she's seen a rise in fostering since the coronavirus outbreak and hopes more people will adopt as they prepare their shelters for a surge in intake.
We're anticipating that in the coming weeks and months, we're going to see a big increase in intake, whether that's because people are experiencing that financial stress, having to move in with family members or friends or give up their housing, or if they get sick and can't take care of their animal.
Vaughn says while the shelters are doing everything they can to prepare for more animals, she hopes people will use this opportunity to help ease that burden. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Have a great day ahead.